Got old uniforms? Reese by Nicole P. has the solution. Nicole, a veteran, handcrafts unique wreaths from military uniforms, a perfect tribute for your loved one's service. Commemorate special moments with personalized wreaths crafted by Nicole. No uniform, no problem. Wreaths by Nicole P. has every fatigue print ready for your custom creation. Explore wreath options at www.wreathsbynicolep.com or message Nicole directly on Facebook. Wreaths by Nicole P. Preserving memories one wreath at a time. Honor the past, celebrate the present.
I remember driving back from Balboa Hospital and I stop at a church. I haven't been to a church in years. And I walk into a church and I sit in the first pew by myself and I have this conversation with the big man. And I say, here's the deal. I'm going to stop taking these meds altogether because I can't keep kind of cheating myself because I'm just cheating everybody else. And if this isn't going to work, then you'll tell me and I'll go do something else. But if it is going to work, I'm putting all my faith in you and I'll execute to the very best of my ability. And I had to go back through 6 weeks of training. I mean, that's painful. Just the idea of one day repeating, and I had to do 6 weeks of it. And knock on wood, I never had another problem.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey, everyone, and thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today's guest is Alden Mills, who has over 40 years experience marked by both failures and successes across diverse realms, sports, military, business, nonprofits, and community action groups, recognizing that leadership, whether of oneself or others, is a pillar of success. Alden's personal triumphs catalyzed a natural progression into leadership roles. As captain of his rowing team and a three-time Navy SEAL platoon commander, he consistently ranked number one. His inventive spirit reflected in childhood notebooks yielded over 40 worldwide patents, including the wildly successful Perfect Push-Up. This single invention burgeoned into Perfect Fitness, a global powerhouse in 70-plus countries with over $95 million in sales within 3 years. Alden's influence extends beyond fitness as he founded and served on boards across various industries. Fueled by his journey, Alden developed the Unstoppable Leadership Methodology. This approach shapes individuals into authentic leaders, mastering the art of building teams and fostering unstoppable cultures. Today, Alden Mills stands as a prominent business thinker, dedicating his time to sharing the three levels of unstoppable leadership through speaking, coaching, writing, and teaching. Against all odds, Alden conquered asthma, rising to become a nationally ranked rower, three-time Navy SEAL platoon commander, CEO, and author of Be Unstoppable, Unstoppable Teams, and Unstoppable Mindset. His remarkable journey, marked by more failures than successes, serves as an inspiration, empowering audiences to surpass perceived limits. I was not going to read your entire bio, Alden, but then I started reading it and I realized just how impressive it was. And then I was like, well, shoot, I got to read this entire thing. That is incredible. I think I told you ahead of time, I didn't do any research on you ahead of time. So reading that is incredibly impressive. And I love having guests on that have overcame incredible things. So thank you, first of all, for being on the show today.
Oh my gosh. More importantly, Rachel, thank you for you having the courage to create this show.
Thank you.
Awesome piece of this. And I hope everybody that's listening today gets some inspiration, not from the successes I've had, but really to hammer home what you talked about in that way too long intro. Talk to my team about that, but about all the failures that I've overcome. And I guarantee you, you had a bunch of failures to overcome to make a transition from being an AT in the Navy at Whidbey Island to turning out and being a mom and following your passion and connecting it with the purpose to help lower suicide, help increase the mental fitness of all those that serve on our front lines. So a debt of gratitude goes to you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And before we get into your story, Alden, there is something that I recently started adding into my podcast. And it's just a more personal question, but if you could describe how you are feeling today in one word or in a few words, how would you describe it?
The way I'm feeling right at this moment is I would put it like a slow fire that's starting to get engaged. I actually really look forward to opportunities to come on podcasts such as your own, because it's a time for me to give what I think can be helpful to others. And doing that energizes me at the same time.
I just came off
a couple of coaching calls where, and those coaching calls can wear you down, right? And this is a time where it's much more freeform. So it gets me excited.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for sharing.
What you're going to find is the energy level is just going to go like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throughout this conversation.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for sharing and for being the second person I've asked that question to. We switched it up a little bit. So I appreciate it. I'm going to pass it off to you now, Alden, so that you can share your story with the listeners.
You know, I think a good place for everybody to start is to have an appreciation for my first leadership coach and how I have never forgotten the leadership that she gave me. And it's really kind of molded me to who I am today. Now, I've made a lot of mistakes along the way, but I'll tell the story to help people understand how she's my leadership coach. I'm 12 years old. I've been in bed for over 30 days. I'm seeing white lights every time I move. And the doctors think I have spinal meningitis. And I get brought into the emergency room and they conduct a spinal tap on me. Turns out I did not have spinal meningitis, but I got sent to the big city of Worcester, Massachusetts. Now, if anybody knows anything about Massachusetts, Worcester's not that big of a city. I grew up in a really small town. And this guy was a lung specialist, pulmonologist. When you go into his office, it looked more like a laboratory. And he looked like an older Danny DeVito, right? Bald head and white wispy hair and thick Coke bottle glasses that made his eyeballs look larger than they actually were. And he would talk and he looked like he was smelling sour milk. And he talked with this kind of nasally New England accent. And he had me blowing through a bunch of these different devices, trying to keep a ping pong ball in between some lines and exhaling on different things. And after a while, he held up his hand and he said, I see what the problem is here. And he brought us to the lab bench that he had in the middle of his kind of office. And he flipped up this chart and he goes, you see this chart and this line right here? This line right here is an average 12-year-old boy's size lungs. Your son's way down here. He was born with smaller than at normal size lungs. And then he flips the chart again. He goes, and you see this line right here? This is his airway. His airway is constricted. You know why? Because he's got asthma. So let me tell you, this is what's going to happen. He's got to lead a less active lifestyle. And he needs to be on medication for the rest of his life. And I suggest you learn the game of chess. Chin drops to my shoulder, my chest. My mom's sitting there and she taps me on the shoulder and she goes, why don't you go wait in the lobby? I'll talk to the good doctor from here. And I sat in that lobby and I had a big pity party for myself. I remember making big puddles on the brown linoleum floor, the tears, thinking about how am I going to learn the game of chess and all the things I'd give up being outside because I loved being outside. And she finally came out and she was in that mom offensive position. You know, the one where the hands are on the hips, leaning forward, kicks my foot with her foot. And it's like, what's wrong with you? And I look up at her, big crocodile tears. I'm like, Mom, chess? How am I going to learn chess? I'm terrible at checkers. And she had these long French cuticle nails and she had them sharpened right? And she had them sharpened for moments where she wanted to get my attention, like this one. And she drops down to a knee, digs that velociraptor claw into my forearm, and she says, "Now you look at me. Nobody defines what you can or can't do but you. I'll get you that medicine, but you have to decide what you're going to do with it. You hear me?" "Okay. Say it back to me." Right, I said it back to her. I just was saying it back because I wanted her to release the grip. But of course, I didn't get it that week. I didn't get it even probably that month. But it kept resonating. And she kept saying, "So go try another sport. So what if you scored against your own team in basketball? At least you scored. Go do another sport." After I finished the season, mind you. You always had to finish what you started in our family. And that became a cascading series of events in my life. You know, it took me to the Naval Academy, where they were convinced I had asthma, and I was able to beat them back and prove to them I didn't. I got to SEAL team. They were convinced that, oh, I had problems with my lungs. I proved to them that I could do it, not that it was easy, and not that it wasn't without challenges. But when you start to embrace the idea that, in much the same way your podcast about, hey, this isn't the end of your story, you're right. You get to decide. You get a say in this story. Now, in much the same way, like when we plan for a mission with SEAL team, you know, planning a mission is one thing. Doing the mission is a totally different thing because the enemy's got a say in how that mission goes. It's not an enemy in life, but life has a say in how your next story goes. And you get to decide how you get to respond to any of those things. And if you take that approach, and you take the approach of, hey, I get to decide what my limit is, what I decide to accept, and then I get to decide how I want to lead myself, then some amazing things can happen over time, but you have to stay consistent to it. You know, part of the reason of coming on and chatting with you is to talk about Unstoppable Mindset, which is this new book I've written. But it's really what I talk about with everybody. And I talk about it from a perspective of leadership. And you see, there's three levels of leadership for all of us. And I'd like people to think of it like you're looking at a dead calm pond, like a reflection pool. It's just perfectly calm, right? Can you see that, Rachel? Just totally glass, right? You pick up that pebble and you chuck it into the middle of your reflection pond, and these three circles radiate out from the action of the pebble disturbing the surface of the water. That pebble is you. It's your action, what you decide to take. The first ring that radiates out is you. It's your influence. It's where you started. It's how you lead yourself. The next ring is how you lead the teams, the people around you. And the third ring is the culture of the organization that you impact, every single one of you. Now, if we break that down a little bit, well, what does it mean to lead ourselves? Well, we have our physical body to lead. We've got our mental, our emotional, and we have our spiritual, right? Those four components are what we can own. And how we lead those will directly impact who wants to follow us. Every single person out here, everyone who's listening, you're a leader. How many people follow you will be decided with how you decide to lead yourself. But you are a leader. You have to lead yourself to turn the computer on to listen to this. You have to lead yourself to do a whole host of things every single day. And a lot of people, from what I've discovered, they don't even think of themselves as a leader. They just, oh, it's not for me. That's some kind of a position that they have to get to at some point. I'm here to tell you the very first part of leading is embracing and owning the fact that you already are a leader. And then once you start to appreciate how you lead yourself directly impacts how you lead a team, and when I get brought in to coach a team, the first thing you end up doing is you look to the leader of that team, because the team is nothing more than a reflection of its leader. And if I get brought in to work on the culture of an organization, well, the first thing you do there isn't to grab a pair of culture binoculars and go, oh, there's the culture, because you can't see it like that, right? The way you find culture is by looking at the consistent actions of what all the other teams in the organization are doing. And when you look at it from those levels, it always starts with how you lead yourself. And then when you think about how you lead yourself, it really comes down to a couple of key controllables of your thoughts, where you focus on those thoughts, and your beliefs. The thoughts, focus, and beliefs, they all work in a loop. And I will call that mindsetting. It's the active process of keeping yourself in that flow state of leading yourself to what it is you're after. Resonate with you, Rachel?
Oh, yeah. First of all, you're an incredible storyteller and speaker. So I'm just like taking it all in. I should have taken notes, but I can always go back and listen to it. That's the beauty of podcasts. What's funny, when you told the story about asthma, the first thought that came to my mind as you're doing your New England accent is my mom is going to very much appreciate this episode because she's from Massachusetts and she's going to get a huge kick out of the accent that you did. So yeah, there's so many things in your story that resonate. And I think that what blows my mind is every single SEAL that I've come across, particularly SEALs, most of them, the world would look at and be like, you shouldn't be a SEAL, or there is something there, whether it be medically, physically, that you wouldn't look at them and think, oh, that person's going to be a SEAL someday. I'm curious, first of all, how you got into the military with asthma, because that's usually like a no-brainer disqualifier.
Yeah, I threw my medical record out.
There you go. But and I think that's important. So, everyone jokes about recruiters, say go to boot camp and whatever, right? But the reason I ask that is because I think it sends a bigger message to people that limitations and rules they're made up. Just because a rule book says you cannot be in the military with asthma does not mean that you cannot be in the military with asthma. And you've, against all odds, proven that. And so I would love to just take it back a little more to that experience, because you say that it wasn't easy and it was hard and all this stuff. And I think to hear that, we don't really appreciate the full magnitude of just how hard someone with asthma has to work to be a SEAL. So if you wouldn't mind dialing back to that part in your story and just walking us a little bit more through some of the challenges that you had to overcome just to make it through that part of your life, I'd appreciate that.
So I'm at the Naval Academy. I've had pneumonia a couple of times. My lungs are not cooperating. I'm sneaking years of asthma medication. Started at 12. I'm now 18. So I'm 6 years on these drugs. I'm 20. I'm 8 years on the drugs. And I get sent to NIH, the National Institute of Health, to do an additional screener, because I passed everything for SEAL training and I've been qualified to do it, but they're not qualifying me because of my lungs. I go through an additional test, I pass it, but the problem is I have all this negative stuff in my record. Somehow my record got lost between NIH and back to Annapolis. So I have blank slate because we didn't have the computer systems at that point. And I show up to SEAL team. Things are going well. I get through Hell Week. I'm the class leader. I'm halfway into second phase. So I'm about, let's say, 15 weeks in out of 30 weeks. And my lungs start filling up with blood. And I'm in the middle of a swim. And I'm drowning. And blood's just aspirating out of my lungs, out of my mouth. And I have to do the dreaded hand raise Emergency boat comes over, pulls me out. When you do the dreaded hand raise, it typically means you're quitting. And I tell them I have a medical emergency, and I tell them I'm not getting in that boat, but something's wrong. And they immediately pull me into medical. They do some blood tests. They raid my room, and they find the medicine. And they slap down a drop-on request, medical disqualification. And they say it's over. You shouldn't have even made it this far. And I tell them I'm not asthmatic. I was using that for performance enhancement, which, by the way, we always use something, even if it's just a lot of Motrin, but people are playing around with all kinds of different things. And I get sent to, pulled out of my class, told that I have to go do this thing called a methacholine challenge. They stick you in a box and they pump this mist in there. I pass it. And it was at that point I decided I have to stop taking the drugs. And now I'm 21 years old, maybe 22 at that point, 10 years. And I remember driving back from Balboa Hospital and I stop at a church. I hadn't been to a church in years. And I walk into a church and I sit in the first pew by myself. And I have this conversation with the big man. And I say, here's the deal. I'm going to stop taking these meds altogether because I can't keep kind of cheating myself because I'm just cheating everybody else. And if this isn't going to work, then you'll tell me and I'll go do something else. But if it is going to work, I'm putting all my faith in you. And I'll execute to the very best of my ability. And I had to go back through 6 weeks of training. I mean, that's painful. Just the idea of one day repeating, and I had to do 6 weeks of it. And knock on wood, I never had another problem. I mean, I got sick. I got pneumonia a couple more times, but I never became a weak link because of my lungs or something.
Wow. That's incredible. What?
I want to just pay that story off with something, Rachel.
Yeah.
You know, I use the spiritual component of God, and it doesn't matter what your higher power is that you want to believe in. But a key component of how you embrace something that you might think is insurmountable is you have to be able to practice faith. Now, the faith that I'm referring to, there's two definitions. The first one in the Oxford Dictionary is the faith of having 100% confidence in someone or something other than yourself. You could have faith in your daughter. You could have faith in your mom, faith in your dog. But the practice of letting go and giving all of your confidence and faith in something else is one of the great values of having a higher power, of having something else. When we would walk through some of the deepest, darkest valleys of the shadows of death, when you're in the SEAL platoon, the faith is in each other. And when you have that kind of faith, and I think of faith that I'm referring to as the highest level of trust, unequivocal. And when you give that, you free yourself to enable yourself to go all in with your full agency on whatever that obstacle is that you think maybe is insurmountable, but I'm going to go all in anyhow, and I'm going to figure out something. And I will have faith that I'll figure out a way to overcome this obstacle and turn it into an opportunity. That, to me, is kind of the essence of what the Unstoppable Mindset book's about, what being unstoppable is about in the first place. Because you have to have been stopped. You got to experience that to then be able to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and go, okay, I'm going at it a different way. Let's keep going.
That leads so beautifully into my next question. I was curious, what was it in your life that helped mold that rock solid mindset that you developed in order to overcome the things that, quite frankly, most people would have quit? when they were drowning and their lungs were filling up with blood. Most people would have quit. I mean, it's ingrained in our minds, our survival croc brains, to say, if I'm dying, I'm quitting, I'm done. What was it in your life that helped you develop that mindset to keep going?
The best way I can describe it is something that I created in the book called an outcome account. And if you take a piece of paper and just draw a big, large capital T on there, the top of the T, write your goal. Graduate from Navy SEAL training. Okay. Then on either side of the T, write a plus on one side, a minus on the other. And then answer this question. Number one, what's the outcome if I graduate from SEAL training? What's the outcome if I don't graduate from SEAL team, right? The positives on one side, minuses on the other. Number two, who does it impact that I love, that I deeply care about if I graduate from SEAL training? Who's that impact? Who does it impact if I don't graduate? What happens there? And then number three, how does it make you feel? How does it make me feel to either graduate or not graduate? And really play out your movie. The first part is the outcome account. The second part is then envisioning the two outcomes and making your own movie, which I call an outcome movie. And what you'll find, as I have found, is that many times I'm like, and by the way, we have a propensity for negativity. We put a much higher level on our negativity bias than we do positivity. Is that you'll find that that negative outcome is enough to scare you into like, I don't care how bad it is. I'm not starring in that movie. I'm not going back to my hometown, tell my parents I quit, have everyone in my life tell me for the rest of your life, oh, I knew you'd never make it. Oh, I knew you couldn't make it. I built avatars in my head. Maybe they were even fictional, of people going, I knew you'd never make it, Mills. You're a loser, right? And when you start creating that kind of internal pressure, well, then it doesn't look so bad at that moment, that fleeting moment when we were feeling weak. Because that's another very important rule to understand. One, we are all leaders. Two, we are all imperfect.
That's powerful.
No single one of us can do it all. And the more we understand that we're imperfect, and that we can give ourselves grace for not beating ourselves up, because beating ourselves up just bruises us. It doesn't help us. It hinders us. It hurts us, right? And if we can get there and give ourselves that grace, then we can pick ourselves up again and we can keep going and we can learn to put our faith in other people. And when we do that, we become force multipliers together and we can do something unstoppable together.
So powerful. You know, those are two things that motivate humans in life, pain and pleasure. And I tend to, like you said, for most things in life with the negativity, I tend to be motivated by the painful things more than the pleasure things. I think a lot of people do. What I love so much about the exercise that you just described is not only does it hit both wickets, but it's not just your standard. Like, I think when you started saying, like, put the T, put what it is, and then start writing, my mind immediately went to, oh, he's going to say, just write, you know, what your goal is underneath and then leave it there. But you took it a step further, and then you took it another step further of the visualization, which I think is the most key important thing. But then not just visualizing it one time, like going as far, if needed, to create an avatar of, you know, whatever it is that whoever's listening to this needs, you know. And I'm definitely going to try this exercise myself, because for me, that might be the key component to breaking through the things in my life that I have been struggling with breaking through. So I really appreciate that you shared that exercise, and I think it's going to be invaluable to a lot of people. And I hope that everyone listening to this episode also grabs a copy of your book too, because I think it's going to be an amazing tool. So you do have three books, and I know the main one we're talking about today is the one that is coming out soon, but briefly chat with us a little bit about your other two books and what was your motivation behind creating those.
I will do that as soon as I want to just highlight one comment that you made.
Go ahead.
Visualizing is 1980s. It's where we were when we were looking at creating the perfect golf swing, right? And like, okay, we got to watch Tiger Woods in 1990s and these, or Michael Jordan making that perfect 3-point. Like, just watch how he does that and start doing that. What I'm asking you to do, and there's a whole chapter on this in the book, is go beyond visualizing to envisioning. Now, the difference here is that visualizing is just the sight of one sense. I want you to envision it and put as many senses into it. So you're creating this multidimensional movie where you can feel it, you can taste it, you can hear it. You're making it as lifelike as possible. On the positive or the negative, you get to decide. You're the movie producer. Okay? Trust me, it works. Your brain can take you there. It's one of the amazingly powerful things. And if we do that often enough, in particular, I'd like you to think about it on the positive side. We literally are giving ourselves a directional force to drive us to that result.
Yeah, that's powerful. I'm really, really excited. I'm not even just saying this, I'm really excited to read this book, but particularly the chapter talking about this, because it's a different perspective than most people talk about. Most gurus out there, people talking about creating things, just do hit on the visualization only, which the visualization is important. Don't get me wrong, but just kind of laying their eyes closed, picturing something. Okay. Well, that was a nice daydream. And then moving on with life. I think that's kind of where my brain has gone a lot of times that I've visualized, because it can. I think a consensus that I've heard from a lot of people is it's really hard if one has never been in that place that that person's trying to visualize, to visualize it, because the brain automatically is like, well, you want to be filthy rich and go make a huge impact in another country, but you've never done that before. So good luck. And that's just what the brain does, because, you know, you probably know more on this, and I'd be curious to hear more of your thoughts on it. But yeah, that's what a lot of people push, is just the visualization, but the brain fights back on that. So I guess, what is the key difference with envisioning?
The key difference with envisioning is that you're using all the other senses. And so now imagine for a moment, you've got 10-year goal to reduce suicide and the mental struggles that come with first responders, and you're receiving an award, and your daughter, who's now 12, comes up to you and gives you this big hug and says, "Mom, I knew you could do this. I've always been there. I've watched you every step of the way." It's not the award you're after. It's that recognition, maybe from your daughter, and feeling her warm embrace, and everybody standing and clapping, and your parents wiping a tear from their eye. All of these things are starting to create this envisioned scenario that you want to star in. You can feel the dress you're wearing. You can feel the weight of the metal over your neck. You can smell the audience, the cheers. You pick it. Are you with me on that?
Yeah. Yeah. That's powerful. It's reminds me of an exercise that I did. It was a grounding exercise I did a few weeks back in this leadership group that I'm part of right now. And it was just for 5 minutes, just tuning into several things, ranging from, you know, one thing you can smell, one thing you can taste, just really honing into what you can feel, what you can see, things like that. And so there is so much power in using all five senses. And so I'm so glad that you have brought this concept. I mean, it's not a new concept by any means, but have brought it to light in your book. And so really, really excited to dive more into that. Thank you.
A grounding exercise is a way to ground you in the moment, to be present, right? It's to focus in on one thing and to be very present. The idea of the envision is to make you very present in the future state that you want in the present state. Often enough, you have to work towards it, but you're coaching your mind to get there.
I love it.
You asked about the other books.
Yes, go ahead.
Two other books. The first was Be Unstoppable. It launched in 2013. And the second one is Unstoppable Teams. You can see I'm on a theme about unstoppable. I love helping people be unstoppable. It's like I think of it as my lifelong mission in life. The first book came about because of my four boys. At the time, one of my dear friends was the first Navy SEAL to die in Afghanistan in 2001, 2002, Neil Roberts. And I knew that a just in case letter was going to an 18-month-old son. And having written a couple of just in case letters, I never had to write one to a child. I just had my mom, my dad, and my brother. It made me wonder because my wife was pregnant with our first child. What did he write? So I wrote this just in case letter to my son while my wife was pregnant. And it was not a good letter. It was do this, don't do that kind of thing. And then she got pregnant again. And then I wrote another just in case letter with Charlie. Then I did again for John. And then by the time William came, I kind of got the handle like, hey, I can't do it like this. It's not going to work. And I decided to create a parable with my wife's pushing, encouragement. And that parable is, and I thought I'd just self-publish it and do it for my friends and family and do 100 copies. Well, about 30,000 copies later, and it put me on the speaking circuit, and people wanted to hear about, hey, what is this eight essential actions to succeed at anything in the seaside town? And it's on its third variant of the book. And then in 2019, I published through HarperCollins Unstoppable Teams. And that's much more, not no parable, it's much more business book. And it builds off of the three levels of leadership. And Unstoppable Mindset is going directly to tier one leadership, leading yourself.
So, should the books be read in any kind of chronological order? Does that matter?
Be Unstoppable is a book that, and it's almost like a Who Moved My Cheese, but the story is way better. Be Unstoppable. A lot of people have been reading it, have been parents and children together. There's a large contingent of single moms that get the book, and it's as if a father was talking to a son or a daughter. And it goes through an entire parable of this fictitious seaside town called Up to You, and everybody's born with a boat. And they have to learn how to navigate the boat. When they graduate, they've got to figure out how to modify it and drive it. And this young sea captain who's not doing a very good job runs across a master and commander. And he sees this boat and he's like, I've never seen a boat like that. I didn't even know they could exist. And he's like, well, I'll teach you the code if you want to know. And he goes through teaching him the code of the eight actions to succeed at anything in life. And at the end of each chapter, I go into nonfiction talking about how I learned each of those eight actions. In much the same way, you know, Unstoppable Mindset is not a parable. Those are all, nonfiction stories. But the idea of success, the same rules apply regardless of what it is you're trying to succeed at. And the key is understanding the rules. And if you understand those rules, then you're going to find there's a lot of things you're just going to have to decide what you want to focus on.
Who has been the most impactful mentor in your journey so far?
Well, the first one would be my first leadership coach, my mom. My dad, too, of course, but my mom was there that first moment. And I mentioned this in the Unstoppable Mindset book in the very opening, is that I'm an amalgam of probably 60 different coaches that have been instrumental in taking me to different levels and helping me see things from different perspectives. There's commanding officers and SEAL team. There's rowing coaches. There's entrepreneurial coaches. My wife, my four boys, each child's here to teach us something too, Mom.
I love that. And I think one of the key things that stood out to me when you first started talking is that your first leadership coach wasn't what most people would expect to hear. When you say coach, most people are thinking like, you know, a Tony Robbins or, you know, a big wig, like a coach, right? They're not thinking like a family member, a mom, who wasn't sitting there intentionally thinking, I am here to be your leadership coach. Your mom was just doing what moms do, raising a child. And so I love that kind of twist in perspective that you threw there. And something to be learned for every person listening is who around us is maybe unintentionally a leadership coach to us that maybe we wouldn't think as a leadership coach. Like you mentioned children, my daughter teaches me things every single day. You know, one of them, patience, for sure. She's two. So a lot of patience and teaches me things about myself that I haven't even discovered yet. And so it's really incredible picking out those things from the people around us who are kind of your off kilter or maybe outside of the typical norm of who we would think would be a leadership coach. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
I want everyone to know if they're a parent out there, it's a massive leadership opportunity.
Oh yeah, 100%, especially when they're toddlers. Let me tell you. Although I hear every stage has its own set of challenges. We just haven't gotten past two yet. So I'm excited to see where the rest of the leadership opportunities come as my daughter gets older. So Alden, your book, Unstoppable Mindset, talk to us a little bit more about that. It has not released yet, correct?
Yeah, it comes out on April 23rd.
Okay. And how can the listeners grab a copy of your book? Can they pre-order it?
You can pre-order it. And I believe you'll have links for them that they can pre-order it. But you can also go to Amazon. It's available in all the normal places. Amazon's a great place to order.
Awesome. And then for everything else, Alden, how can people find and support you?
They can find me at my website, alden-mills.com. alden-mills.com. I put out a weekly blog. Maybe it's every other week, depending on the spirit that moves me, but I've got years of blogs of all kinds of valuable insights on things. And, you know, if you're looking to lead teams, you can check out Unstoppable Teams. If you're really wanting to work on your own mental, emotional, spiritual, physical focus, get Unstoppable Mindset.
Awesome. Well, like you already said, I'll make sure to have all those links posted in the show notes. Like I say, for every guest, please go support, even if it is just following on social media and sharing with your network what the book is and how to grab a copy of that book, because you never know who in your circle might need this information. You'd probably be surprised at who in your circle needs this information. I'm a little biased and I think that everyone needs this information. So I would say everyone in your circle needs it. But, you know, at a minimum, if you're not in the position where you can grab a copy, please at least share it out with everyone that you know, to just spread this incredible message and tool mainly for people that maybe don't know where else to look. So Alden, I am so appreciative that you came on the show today. Sure, we could talk for hours about all the little snippets of your journey. You've done so much and you've left such an impact on the world so far and the time that you've walked this planet. And so very humbled and grateful that you took the time to be here today and just share a little bit of that with the listeners. Are there any last words or pieces of advice that you want to leave the listeners with today?
Sure. Unstoppable is a choice. You're built to be unstoppable. It's your call. You make the decision. You decide what you want to get after and then go for it.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.